How are you guys doing up there, by the way? Everything good?
We're doing great, actually.
It's getting cold. Real cold here.
Yeah, well, I know it well, yeah.
Again, with the start of your career, and you said you were about to say you started off at Douglas College. What was that like?
Well, I started out at Douglas College, but I wasn't in any communications program or broadcasting program. I was actually in graphic arts. I come from a family who likes to draw and paint and stuff like that. Yeah. And I really liked it. It was good. I went there for a year, and then I decided to take a break. And the other thing my family was really into was sports. We played all sports, mostly lacrosse.
Yeah.
Some hockey as well. And I was just fascinated by sports, and not necessarily playing it, but just all the stats, all the numbers, everything that I think anybody who's into sports broadcasting would be fascinated with. So I took a year off of the graphic arts and went into the Columbia School of Broadcasting, and I took some night courses at BCIT as well for broadcasting. And when I was about 19, after getting my diploma, I got a job offer up north in Dawson Creek, and a little bit scared, a big city kid from Vancouver, went up there, and I absolutely loved it. I spent like 2.5 years in Dawson Creek doing everything. I did. I actually got hired as a newscaster to read the news. Oh. I just took everything. My instructor just said, whatever they offer you, take it, because whoever's doing the sports job there, and that was my goal, to get into the sports department. Whoever's doing sports up there will be gone in 6 or 7 months. They'll be looking to get out, and he was bang on.
Yeah. So
I worked in news for a little bit, did DJing for a little bit, and then eventually the sports director left, and then I took over his job. And part of being a sports director was doing the weather on TV, doing a classified show where we sold items on the radio.
Just
got to do everything up there. From there, I went to Red Deer and worked at a country music station called CKGY, and did volunteer play-by-play on television at Shaw Cable and Red Deer as well. And it was just a great experience. That was all before I went to Vancouver.
Awesome. And when you went to Vancouver, sort of what was your journey there towards the Sportsnet anchor job?
Well, I worked for 16 years at a show called Sports Page.
Yeah.
And it was at a station called CKVU, which is now City TV in Vancouver. And one of the best experiences of my life. I got to go, travel all over North America with the Canucks and the Lions. And I reported there. I anchored there. And we just had a really good group that basically was able to try anything without judgment. I mean, you just got to go be creative and artistic and try anything. And it was a real vibrant sports scene in Vancouver, as it still is today. And just absolutely loved it. And we had a kick-ass show. We did really well for all of those 16 years. And I really set me up for in terms of where I am now.
And what's the transition like from Sports Page to a network like Sportsnet, where it's, you said you had a kick-ass and sort of more open environment at Sports Page. Is it quite the transition to a more closed environment with Sportsnet?
Well, it's completely different, because, Smoke, as you'll learn, is when you get into this business, and Dave, Toronto runs a lot of things.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference. Is when I worked for the independent station, we just did whatever we wanted. I mean, no, don't get me wrong, we worked really hard.
Yeah.
But now it's like everything runs through Toronto, with Sportsnet, with TSN, the Score, which is now Sportsnet 360. Everything runs through Toronto, and you have to deal with them a lot. And it's not as independent as we used to be. So that can be a little bit frustrating, but they run a really tight ship. They're very well organized. It's a network, so it's a much bigger beast we're dealing with.
Yeah.
It's not as much freedom, but it's still a great job.
Exactly. And what's it like sort of being, the anchor at night and sort of getting to do the news with Gary Volk and such to report on the Canucks?
Well, now we've got James Cebulski helping us out as well.
Yeah.
But, it's a dream job. Like, I get to Work with a guy in Gary that I watch play a lot, and he played in Red Deer for a while where I worked, so yeah. Sort of felt I always had a connection with him. A little bit tough because he's way better looking than me.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, well, it's close anyway, but no, it's great. It's great. And the thing is that there's absolutely no script. Like, we go on the air, pregame intermissions and postgame with no script.
Yeah.
We have an idea of what we're going to talk about, but it's really, really exciting. You go on, and it's kind of scary, and you have some notes, and you just do your best to pull it off.
Sort of a little bit of improv kind of thing going on.
You know, really, absolutely. And it's something I hadn't done earlier in my career, and I really like it. It's not like play-by-play where you can just you're describing the stuff in front of you, just kind of going off the top of your head and hoping that images pop up that you've talked about earlier, and it's pretty exciting. I really like that challenge.
Well, it sounds awesome, Mr. Don Taylor.
Yeah.
And I've listened to you on Pran Taylor, and
yeah.
One story we've come to understand is that you're an advocate on putting Mr. Mark Messier's number on the rafters at Rogers Arena. Can you explain that?
Well, no, I actually number 11. As a kid, I've never had this confirmed. But I've got a pretty good memory, and I remember distinctly the Canucks retired number 11, but not for Messier. They retired it from a guy named Wayne Mackey, who passed away in the prime of his life from cancer.
Okay.
And when Messier came, all of a sudden he was wearing number 11. It was, and a lot of us who were older were going, well, what's going on here? You're not respecting this man, this and his family, which at the time, as far as I know, was still living in Vancouver, and they just kind of ignored it, and nobody said anything, and they haven't said anything to this day. And yet, nobody's worn 11 since Mark Messier. So I kind of just wish somebody would address it with the Canucks organization and let people know what's going on. Because, Dave Smoke, you guys saw Messier perform in Vancouver. There's no way they're retiring the number for Messier. He was disappointing here. But
no, it was a joke.
I just wonder what what's going on with number 11. And I often think, and a lot of what I do, I always mention old numbers on my show, and
yeah.
I really care about the older players. That's why I do it. Like, I'll talk about Wayne Mackey's number 11, and I'll mention that Mike Pellick wore number 4 for the Leafs, or that Keith Magnuson wore number 3. Dave Babich wore 44, because I always think that the guys are out there, or their families are out there listening or watching, and that's why I do it. I think they get a kick out of that sort of stuff. So, I think that a lot of people might think that's a small issue, but I bet you it isn't to the Mackey family.
Yeah,
exactly.
I completely understand. It's also putting the Canucks' history in more of a point, and it's
right. It's in its right place. I think I just want to know what's going on, because I remember I was a little kid, but I remember, distinctly that they retired that number. And, if they want to honor that number, maybe not retire it, but honor it, or to do something to honor his memory, I think that would be the right thing to do.
Maybe put him on the Ring of Honor, with the other players?
Something, or some acknowledgement in the building that, here was a guy who, was playing with the Canucks and passed away in the prime of his career. He wore number 11. And whether they want to bring the number back or not, I'm not sure, but do something.
Oh, I agree. I think and that's great. And that's a lot of the fans that still watch it are from sort of your era,
yeah.
And remember things such as that.
Right. Yeah.
So it's definitely something that I agree needs to be addressed in some sort of manner for sure.
Yeah, and like I say, a lot of it for me is just you meet the older players and you get to know a lot of the older guys, and a lot of them, they didn't make very few of them made anywhere near the type of money the players do now. And, so little things like that mean a lot to them. And I think they care when people remember what they did during their career. So that's why I mention those sort of things.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And let's go transition more towards the Canucks of now.
Yeah.
Well, who has impressed you the most on the Canucks in these first handful of games, and who's been sort of disappointing?
Yeah, well, I think I'll tell you who's impressed me the most, and this is off the ice, John Tortorella.
Yeah.
I love the way he coaches. Somebody's playing well. I don't care how much money he's making. I don't care what his resume is. he's getting the most ice time. And the best example of that is Mike Santorelli.
Yeah.
You know, he's been playing 20-plus minutes. I mean, his resume isn't anywhere near what, say, David Booth's is, but he's playing way better than he is. So I love that. I love the way Santorelli's playing. Now, I'm a bit biased there because he's from Burnaby, which is my hometown. But but the other guy I like, Eddie's, if you ever meet him, you'll agree with me, but Eddie's playing great, not just offensively with the big shot, but defensively. That's Jason Garrison.
Yeah, from Nanaimo.
He played half an hour in Philadelphia on Tuesday, and he just does a lot. He's a real strong guy, does some good things in front of the net, does a lot defensively that I don't think he gets credit for. Plus, he's got the big shot. Eddie's real smart with the puck. He gets rid of it quickly, and he does a lot of things out there. So you know a guy like Tortorella really is impressed by that. But, again, getting back to Torts, I mean, you know, despite all the bluster and everything we all worried about, let's just talk about him as a coach. I love it. And he hasn't blown up at the media yet, and I don't think that's a big deal if he does. It means he cares.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want the act we saw in New York, but he's obviously real passionate. I'd rather have that than a guy who doesn't care, who's just collecting a paycheck. And I love the way he's mixing up the lines. This isn't working. It's not the Sedins' divine right to play, especially with the money the Canucks are paying them.
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing, but it's not their divine right to play each and every shift together. If it's not working, you'd split up any other pair of players. Why wouldn't you split up the Sedins? I really like the way he coaches.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is he is not afraid to split them up, and they've done well when they've been split up. I mean, he's
Henrik won the Hart Trophy.
Yeah.
Playing a quarter of the season, I think it was 20 games, 21 games, something like that, without Daniel, who had broken his leg earlier in the season.
Oh, exactly.
That was the 2009-10 season. So it's got precedent. Breaking them up can work. And you know what? I think the Sedins, they're such nice guys.
Yeah.
I think they kind of welcome it just because it's something, they wanted something different.
Well, exactly. And it makes the rest of the players that get to play with them even better. I mean, Hansen is definitely, he's improved when he's on the line with a player like Henrik Sedin.
Yeah. There's another guy that I think is going to thrive under Tortorella is Hansen. I look for him to contribute a lot more offensively. But, yeah, spark it up a bit. Do something different. Guys, I'm telling you, I think the best coaches in the NHL are the ones that do things that are different throughout the course of a year. They just get the players' attention throughout the course of the year instead of doing the same old thing each and every day. It's a long, long schedule. We all complain about it. So why not do something different? I might be in the minority here, but I like the way Mark Crawford did when he was with the Canucks. He used to have outdoor practices when the team went back east. You know, they'd visit the Parliament building, stuff like that. You've got to do things that are different. Mix up the lines, whatever it takes to break up the monotony of an 82-game schedule. I think those are the best coaches.
Yeah, definitely. And, team building also splitting up the Canucks makes them a deeper team.
Yeah. Yeah, and a closer team, too. And that's, I think when you're playing in the NHL, and I talk to a lot of guys, of course, never played at that level myself, but when it goes beyond just being a business and it gets back to being a game again, fun, I think those are the teams that end up having a lot of success.
Yeah, and who is, speaking of success and sort of lack thereof, who has been sort of the most disappointing player as of late that you think that can improve or that may break out soon?
Yeah, and sorry, Smoke, he asked me that before and I forgot to answer it, but I got to say Cassian.
Yeah.
And just because it's funny, as we speak, I don't know when this interview is running, but I'm just doing research for the Canucks game in Buffalo. And I'm looking at his first game against the Sabres was 5 days after the trade from Buffalo.
Yeah.
Right. In 2012. I think it was March 5th.
Yeah.
And I looked at that game and the Canucks lost. I think it was 5-3, but Cassian had a goal and assist. 6 shots and 7 hits.
He's a monster. He was an absolute monster.
Yeah,
and people,
that might have been his best game.
Yeah.
As a Canuck. So what's happened since then? Is he partying too much? Is he not dedicated enough? Does he think he's arrived? Does he think this is it? That he's, that he's God's gift and he doesn't have to work harder? I don't know. But what happened to that guy? So, that was a big, not a big game, but it was certainly a significant game, and he rose to the occasion. And we haven't seen that since, other than the start of last season when he, popped in 5 goals in 7 games, whatever it was. But he's playing with the Sedins, so, that certainly helped. And then he just wasn't responsible defensively enough and wasn't making his presence felt enough to stay in that line. And we just, haven't seen much of him since in terms of making an impact. And I'd say right now he's the guy that and then you look at the suspension. I realize he's just coming off the suspension, but the suspension itself was disappointing. It was just a stupid play, let's be honest here.
Yeah, who swings their stick like that?
That guy we saw right after the Buffalo trade with Cassian and Hodgson.
Yeah, it seems to me that Cassian's discipline it lacks.
Yeah, a lot of people want to point to what happens off the ice, and there's some pictures of him, partying at the Roxy and, dancing on a table at the Roxy that are on Twitter and all over the internet. Well, guys, I don't really, I will never criticize a guy for that, because Lord knows what I would have been doing if I was making that kind of money, playing in the NHL, getting recognized by good-looking girls, in my 20s. So, everybody's going to have a moment like that. I get that, but I just don't know what's going on.
Well, I think that it's sort of the same thing as Seguin has happened in Boston, and Kane used to in Chicago.
And then and you hope that guys like Cassian and Seguin, although I don't know how many Canuck fans want an ex-Bruin to turn things around, but certainly in the case of Cassian, kind of get it, because nobody was more notorious for partying than Patrick Kane. And last time I checked, the guy's got 2 Stanley Cups. He's the reigning Conn Smythe Trophy winner, and he's got an Olympic silver medal. So something's going right for the guy. And I don't know if he's turned his life around, but certainly you can talk all you want about what he does off the ice, but on the ice and as far as training goes, he's doing something right. So maybe those guys, let's focus on Cassian. Maybe he's like Kane. Hopefully he can the light could go on the way it has for Kane.
Yeah, for me, I don't really care what they do off the ice as long as it doesn't affect their on-ice product.
But, Dave, it's so different now, right? Because what we do, what players do off the ice now, it's recorded, Lord knows what some of the guys, Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, Lord knows what they were up to in their 20s, with the fame and the recognition and all that stuff. It just didn't get recorded. It's so different now. Guys have to be extra careful, and they're going to get caught every once in a while. But I have a hard time, coming down on them if they're out for a few beer.
Exactly.
I feel, but I know. I think I'm in the minority. I think most people don't want to see that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but it's Cassian's on ice discipline with penalties, and such and such, and that's why I have a problem with him.
And obviously coaches do too. You look at his ice time. He's been on, when he's been playing, he's had a very, very little opportunity with Tortorella on the first line or the second line. So, something's up. The coaches seem way more than we do, and they don't like what they see either.
Well, yeah, he's in the Montreal game. He was pretty much invisible.
And then I think he went after Subban after that big head, but that was about it. And then he fought Shen on one of the Shens on in the Philadelphia game. But people just you want to see more. I think one thing about him is he's a great skater, and I think he's got good hands. I think he's got to keep his game a little simpler. Like sometimes, he'll try to get too fancy. I think if he just tries to do things simply, both in his own end and the opposition end, I think things might just start coming for him.
Well, look at Subban. He used to be, everyone used to hate upon him the way he played, and now he's the reigning Norris champion, and most likely, maybe, again, as he's leading the goals.
Love the way he plays, and, it's funny. I don't care who you follow or who you like. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm watching teams, I often look at the Canadian guys to see how they're doing. And, maybe I'm not a big Montreal fan, but I like to see Subban do well because I want him to do well in Sochi.
Well, exactly. I look at, players like Subban, like Milan Lucic, he's got a chance.
Yeah.
Brad Marchand has a chance.
Yeah.
So, you I agree. You look at all these players, these young guys.
Yeah. Across Matthew the league. Shane, he's had a great start, and you wonder if he'll get any consideration, but he's so fast. And I think he might be perfect for that, for Sochi.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And so speaking with young players, we got a sort of a look at four young players, our prospects in the beginning of the season, Gauntz,
yeah.
Horvat, Shinkirk, and Corrado.
Yeah.
Which one of those guys impressed you the most?
Oh, well, they're all impressive. And we went to the Jake Milford golf tournament. We got to know these guys, you know, well, not well, but we got a little bit off the ice. But, I mean, Corrado is very impressive on the ice and off the ice. He's just very composed. He's a little older than those guys, so that probably helps. You know, he's sort of in the Tanev mold where I think he's a defenseman coaches are going to like just because he keeps his game so simple and doesn't make many mistakes. But, you know, it's hard not to, and this is nothing against Gauntz or Horvat, but it's hard not to be impressed by Shinkarik.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see him walking down the street, like you would never, ever guess he's a hockey player. He looks like a kid, you know. He's got pretty big shoulders than that, but he's shorter. You know, he's got a long way to go in terms of growing. It looks like anyway, but he is so composed. He's obviously got great parents, really well brought up, really well spoken, and but on the ice, he's pretty flashy, kind of cocky. He's got some, you know, we talked about Patrick Kane earlier. He's
yeah.
got some Patrick Kane in him. He's got that move where he opens up his legs and fools the defenseman, and
yeah.
not afraid to shoot from anywhere. And he's got a lot of offensive upside, and he's not afraid to try different things. And he hustles out there. You notice him. He'll even hit guys, and you can tell he gets under the opposition skin. Canucks need a guy like that. I'm really impressed by him.
Yeah, well, we're really excited because Shinkirk is coming to Prince George to play the Cougars. In a couple months from now.
Yeah, Medicine Hat. Yeah, that, no kidding. And to see him in that environment, you hope that he does. I haven't looked at his stats lately, but I know Horvat's doing well with London. I think last time I checked, he had 6 points in 3 games. That was last week. But, yeah, you hope his experience at Canuck camp and those preseason games helps him.
And another edge to Shinkirk that could be brought up is the fact that he's got, he's got an edge. He's got a sort of a Brad Marchand type attitude where he's not afraid to sort of give him the old, you know, elbow or the stick or to give himself some room.
Yeah, and also, and I mean this as a complete compliment. I think Marchand has kind of a look, kind of a face that you'd just like to take a shot at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Shinkarik kind of has got that too. I hope his parents aren't listening, but I mean that totally as a compliment. I want a guy like that on my team. I love it. You got some guy who's a little jerk, and he's coming across like a little jerk.
Yeah.
And he just gets the other team completely off its game. Marchand's the king of that. Kane can do that. You know, and I think Shinkarik's capable of doing that. The Canucks haven't had a guy like that for a long time, and I think it's really I think it could be a real important part of the team.
Could you liken him to maybe like a Matt Cook with a little bit more skill with the hands?
Beautiful. That's exactly it. I don't think he's gonna ever be as notorious as Matt Cook. I don't think he's gonna be hitting guys from behind.
Oh, well, we hope not for sure.
Think
yeah,
he's got the devil horns to that extent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And sort of last thing with the sort of the Canucks players. We want to start to talk about Luongo and the Schneider trade. When you heard this, when Gary Bettman announced it at the trade day, were you surprised that it was Schneider heading out of town instead of Luongo?
Yeah, well, not really. We talked about that on our radio show that, you know what, I just because of the numbers involved in the 12-year contract, that I wasn't totally shocked. What I was shocked at was, and it reminded me of the old Seinfeld episode. Remember when Kramer got the coffee, he burned the coffee.
Oh, yeah.
The coffee burned him in the movie theater, and he went to sue whatever coffee company it was, and they offered him coffee for life.
Yeah.
And then he shook the guy's hand before he had the rest of the sentence was over.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Coffee for life, and then he shook his hand and the deal was over. There was something else coming. And that's what I was waiting for when I heard the trade.
Yeah.
You know, we trade Corey Schneider for a first-round draft pick, but there was no and.
Yeah.
That was it.
And like, some people were saying that other GMs, such as Edmonton's GM, was shocked at the trade because they had offered that and Factor.
Right. Like, I just thought there was, I didn't think a ninth overall first-round draft pick for a goaltender who's going to be your franchise guy, for has the capability of being your franchise guy for 10, 15 years. Like, that's it? Like, I was, you know, and he's proven to some extent. I was really surprised. I thought there'd be, at the very least, a player that could, a solid player that could help them now.
Yeah.
Especially when you think about the position Mike Gillis is in. Like, can he wait? Can he afford to wait 3, 4, 5 years for Bo Horvat? I don't know, you know, because things haven't gone, you know, overly well for Mike here. So that I just was surprised they did get somebody that could help them now.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe the expiring contract of Clarkson, and maybe we've tried to at least
sign
him, right?
Or even, like, you know, throw in a fourth and fifth rounder, you know, like, or something. You know, I know that is that's for the future as well, but just something other than what they got. I was really surprised.
Well, exactly. I mean, you got fourth rounders, fifth rounders that they might actually turn out to be something. I mean,
well, yeah, well, okay, I'll tell you guys the best example of that, and it sticks in my craw like nothing else, and that is a fifth rounder in 2010 that Montreal took by the name of Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah.
And the Canucks had their choice in the fifth round was two spots earlier, and they picked Adam Polisek, the second guy they picked, but you know, in their history with the name Polisek. And
yeah,
you know, the first guy did work out, Libor Polisek. But anyway, here's a kid who grew up in Edmonton, then moved as a young teenager to Vancouver. He was playing for the Vancouver Giants. He's in your backyard. It's the fifth round. Yeah, he's small, but you drafted Jordan Schrader a year earlier.
Yeah.
You know, who's, last time I checked, he's not Milan Lucic.
Yeah.
Like, take the kid. And that's one thing that the Canucks have frustrated me with, and I think a lot of people with through the years. In the later rounds, take the local kids. You know, all things being equal. All things being equal. Someone's got talent that you think superior to a local kid. Okay, take him. But you're telling me Brendan Gallagher in the fifth round wouldn't have been a good choice? Like, that really frustrates me. I think in the later rounds, take the local kids.
Well, exactly. He was leading.
Most of them want to play here, and I understand some don't, but most of them want to play here. It's great for marketing, and if the kid's good and he goes somewhere else and lights it up and you had a chance to get him, that looks so bad.
Yeah, exactly. He was leading the Giants, and he was a integral part of their Memorial Cup win.
Yeah. Yeah, and even and like you, I forget which World Juniors it was, but Don Hay had him out every second shift in the when they were playing the Americans in the gold medal game. I mean, the guy plays well beyond his size.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. So now transitioning to something else.
Yeah.
We just interviewed Nick Kypros, and he argued that the Canucks still feel they're legitimate contenders for the Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that they are? And if not, what should they do?
I don't think they are, and I feel bad at saying that. I'm a longtime Vancouverite, but I think that's reality. I just don't think they're deep enough with their forward lines. I don't mind their defense and their goaltending, and I think for all the talk about Luongo, I think he's the least of their worries.
Yeah.
But you look at these teams, guys. When you get into the playoffs, like the Kings, the Bruins, the Blackhawks, when you're in that grind, you finish an 82 game schedule. You're grinding in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Your third and fourth lines become really important.
Well, they have
Canucks
depth.
Don't have that. They don't even play like they have no confidence in their fourth line. So
exactly, the Canucks don't have depth, and they don't have size in that depth as well.
Yeah, Sestito's there, but you know, you come playoffs. How much is he going to play? He's not as good a skater as some of these guys, third and fourth line players on those big teams.
Exactly.
So should they slash and burn, or should they stay the Flames and mediocrity?
I think as long as you got the Sedins, I think you got to go for it, you know, and what they really need is for Cassian to step up, for Booth to step up, one of, maybe not this year, but one of Horvat, Schrader, Shinkara to somehow surprise everybody, you know, and stay on the NHL roster and contribute. They need to get a break somewhere, and you know, but as long as the Sedins are there, I just don't think you can slash a bird. Now, The Sedins are unrestricted free agents at the end of the season.
Yeah.
If they decide, hey, look, we don't like Tortorella, or we don't like the direction Mike Gillis is going, and this is what no one talks about. It's not just the Canucks decision. It could be the Sedins decision. Maybe they'll want to go, and if that's the case, then yeah, you got to slash and burn.
So if that happens, let's say we are at the same place we are right now, or we're even playing even worse,
yeah.
Should we trade them at the trade deadline?
Sorry, Dave, say again.
So let's say that the Canucks are at the same place they are right now,
yeah.
You know, 500,
yeah.
Or even worse,
yeah.
Should they trade the Sedins in the trade deadline?
If they were at...
If they're at
yeah,
like...
No, I get, I totally get it. Yeah, that's a great question. I think I'm going to skirt around the question by saying I think by then we'll know whether or not they want to be here or they'll have signed by then. If they haven't signed by then clearly they don't want to be here, and you'd have to trade them.
Yeah, but what happened with the last time when they signed at like the 11th hour kind
right?
of thing.
Yeah, my memory fails me on that one. But I would think that if they haven't signed by then, that's a clear indication they'd like to move on and maybe go to a cup contender. But it's tough to trade them because there's two guys, right? You know, you could probably trade them at a deadline. Maybe a team wants a short-term fix, but it's tough for a lot of teams to, you know, free up all that cap room for two guys that are.
Do you think the
very good money.
Do you think the splitting up that Tortorella has done has sort of helped with the possible trade bait that could happen?
I think they like it, honestly, guys. I think they like that. They're still going to play together on the power play, first unit power play. They're still going to play. Throughout the course of the season, I'm sure they'll play the majority of five-on-five shifts together. But I think they like the fact that they've got a coach that's got the guts to say, no, guys, you know what? Let's try this for now. And I think that gives them a spark, too, you know, especially at, you know, they're in their mid-30s now at this stage of their career. And I think I'm, you know, I said this earlier, they need that. They need a little oomph, you know. And I think they appreciate that. Now, if the team just doesn't win with even using that formula, then maybe they'll want to head out.
Exactly. And Dave, you had a question about Raymond.
Oh, yeah, Raymond. So
yeah.
Do you think not signing Raymond was a mistake? Or
it looks like it, doesn't it, right now?
Yeah.
But the Eastern Conference, you got a little, you know, by and large, a little more room in the Eastern Conference. You know, the NHL history is rife with guys who get off to great starts and then tail off. So we'll see what happens in the long run with him, especially if he starts, you know, If Mason Raymond starts continues like this, he's going to get more attention. He's going to start to get hit more, bumped around more. We'll
yeah.
see how he reacts to that. The other thing with Mason Raymond is people can say it's a mistake, and right now it certainly looks like one. But at the time, when you know, in the summer, there wasn't, and people can say all they want, I didn't hear anything. There wasn't a peep out of any Vancouver fans or listener or viewer or anybody or
yeah.
member of the media saying, we got to keep this guy. Nobody said that. And
yeah.
when he left, people barely noticed. When he signed with Toronto, it was like, whatever, he probably won't even make that team. So people could complain all they want. I didn't hear anything from anybody in the offseason when he was unsigned.
Well, exactly. And then, and that's the thing. That's sort of the risk you take when you let someone like that go, because he's not working out well with you, but
yeah, yeah.
sort of look at a guy like Keith Ballard, who's doing
right?
pretty good.
He's playing with Dave Bowen. He's got a good center. Like I said, there's by and large a little more room in the
yeah.
Eastern Conference. He's got a coach who right now believes in him, so things are pretty good. But long run, we'll see what happens.
Exactly. And lastly, it's been reported on Sportsnet that there's maybe some trade talks between the Oilers and the Buffalo Sabres involving Miller and Vanek for Yakupov and something else. Obviously, things aren't hammered out or anything, but is this sort of the thing that the Oilers and the Sabres need to sort of kickstart their season?
Yeah, well, you know, when are the Oilers going to turn around? I mean, we've been waiting, it seems, for, you know, couple of years now. But Vanek's a good player. Miller probably needs a change. I wonder how he'd like playing in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And then, the Oilers need something, but they need a goalie. So I would think that judging how, what I the, like, not only are they giving up a lot of goals, but have you guys seen the goals, the type of goals they give up? They're just awful.
Yeah, Dubnyk has really not played well. He gets beat from like a point
and
often.
Not that against him, but they need help on defense, but especially in goal. So from an Edmonton point of view, yeah, getting Ryan Miller, who's certainly tailed off since 2010 when he almost beat the Canadians single-handedly at the Olympics.
Yeah.
But he's tailed off, but maybe he needs a fresh start in a real hockey environment. Maybe he'd like that. Vanek's that underrated player. But if they think they're getting those two guys for just Yakupov, they're dreaming. They'd have to give up somebody else pretty good as well.
Yeah, no doubt. But now going back to the other questions, Raymond, you know, it seemed that, you know, the Canucks don't seem to get the luck.
Yeah.
And Kiprios was talking about how San Jose, you know, they have been remaining Stanley Cup contenders for the last 8-10 years.
Yeah, it seems
and,
like, doesn't it?
Canucks, you know, we're saying we should maybe change something up. Yeah. It seems that they have the luck, and the Canucks just don't seem to have it ever.
It's unbelievable. Like Doug Wilson is, I think, the one of the best executives in the NHL, and he doesn't get it, doesn't get credit for it. And I know he has a good staff as well, but I don't know. Is it luck, or is it just they know what to do with an organization? I just cannot believe the depth that that team has. Like, we're talking Thornton and Marleau are still there, and they've got all these great young guys. And the thing that's unbelievable, they've got the young guys in Pavelski and Couture coming up behind Marleau and Thornton. And some people say that it's Couture's team now. And then you got Hurdle, you know, another great young player that's behind Couture and Pavelski. Like, they've got three levels of really good players at different ages. Like, it's unbelievable. And the other thing that they did is they pick up Antti Niemi. He's a better goaltender than he was in 2010. Whoever's working with him in San Jose, and certainly he deserves some of the credit, is doing a great job. You know, and then the Brent Burns experiment. I mean, I can't remember a guy making that switch that effectively. The only guy that comes to mind in terms of making that switch that effectively is Wendell Clark, who went as a defenseman in Saskatoon a little bit with the Leafs and then played up front on the wing with the Leafs and was outstanding. And Burns, he's incredible out there. Like, you notice him every single shift, partly because of his beard and his haircut.
Yes.
But the guy's an effective player, and for them to make that trade and give up Setoguchi and a couple of guys who, you know, I don't think fit in well in San Jose, they needed more speed, and to see the fact that, hey, we can trade for this guy, make him into a forward, which he had played earlier in his career, that was a brilliant move.
It was a brilliant move, and but it seemed to work out, whereas, you know, trades with Booth and Ballard.
Yeah.
It just, and from Buffalo, the guy from Buffalo last year, the center from Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot his name. Or Dallas.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to work out for the Canucks.
Derek Roy,
who's now in St. Louis. Yeah. And the one with Booth doesn't bother me as much. It's a cap hit, but they didn't give up a ton for that, like Marco Sturm and Michael Samuel said. But giving up on Grabner for Ballard was obviously a big, big, big mistake. And, you know, then you'd never warm to Ballard. He's actually playing okay with Minnesota now. So that was a big mistake. And, yeah, it doesn't seem to work. The drafting hasn't been there. The trades haven't been there. And meanwhile, all these other teams seem to, you know, strike gold left and right.
Well, do you think it's because of our scouting? Because San Jose has another young prospect coming up in Mirko Mueller.
Yes. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Obviously, something's going right here. Here's what I don't understand: like all these years, the Canucks got to go steal some of these scouts. You know, if they got a guy who's a whiz kid in Detroit or, you know, a grandmaster in San Jose, go out and they make tons of money. The Canucks. Go out and steal one of these scouts from these guys. Like where they live or whatever the case may be, go out and buy them, you know, because they're clearly doing a pretty good job. And, you know, not only do you steal a good guy away, but you weaken another organization that's in your conference. I think scouting might be one of the most underrated parts of any organization. Go out and spend some money on it.
No, exactly. And that's the thing is Canucks have been notoriously subpar when drafting in previous years. I mean, we've had some good people like Tanev, of course, has worked out well. But, yeah, overall, it's just not been great.
Nope. Whereas Detroit is the master.
Yeah, they got great scouts in Europe and in Canada, and they make, you know, nobody makes gold out of so-called garbage better than they do. They draft guys late. I mean, Nick Lidstrom was a third rounder. I mean, you know, that just doesn't happen. And nobody does it better. And the Canucks are trying to, you know, copy that model. But the thing is, you got to have the right people in place in order for it to work.
Yes, and you have to get the draft picks and such and such. So, finally, what teams have surprised you the most, and in positively and negatively?
So far this season?
Yes.
Well, I just, you know, the team that Canucks are playing tonight, Buffalo, just so bad. I didn't think I know the Rangers have a tough schedule, but I didn't think they'd be that bad to start. I mean, they were bad in the preseason and the start of the regular season. So that really surprises me. I mean, Toronto's been fabulous. So has Colorado. You know, you get off to I know sometimes it takes older, bigger players a long time to get going, and certainly Colorado certainly has a lot of young players. But I just didn't think, Patrick Waugh would have him going this quickly. I mean, J.S. Jaguar playing that well, who saw that coming? I know Waugh was his idol and all that. Maybe he gets a spark from that. But, Varlamov's been very good as well. But, you know, I don't think anybody predicted Colorado to do this well. Certainly nobody thought the Leafs would do this well, although, you know, they did have a, you know, very good first round last year despite the way it ended. So I guess that surprised me a bit, no doubt about it.
Well, Jaguar is sort of going back to the Conn Smythe sort of style that he was back in a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, they've got that Francois Allaire there, who's like the goaltender of the guru of Quebec, born goaltender. So I'm sure they all feel comfortable.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we'll let you go. You probably got your drywall thing going on.
Well, guys. I hope everything goes well with your careers.
Well, thank you very much, and it's been an absolute honor getting to talk to you today.
Oh, no problem, guys. Anytime. And again, I hope everything goes well. And don't be like a lot of the young guys who are afraid to go work in small towns, because there's, Rick Ball?
Yeah.
First of all, there's a lot of guys in Vancouver who are from Vancouver who are hanging around the radio stations and the TV stations, and they're doing okay.
Yeah.
But Rick went and worked in Kelowna. He went and worked in Victoria, spent a lot of time there, came into Vancouver, and he blew by all those guys.
Wow.
He blew by them all. Like, and now he's doing Hockey Night in Canada play-by-play because he was better than them. He had a lot of experience doing stuff in the small towns. And you and I know that Kelowna and Victoria aren't exactly small, and they're a lot of fun. But
yeah, exactly.
Don't be scared of that small town experience. I did it. We all did it. And a lot of the guys who were successful did it. And I just had the time of my life, dude. I loved working up north. I thought it was great.
Okay, well,
we're just having a time of our life in Prince George. It's not exactly a big town. And
yeah. No, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you again, Don Taylor.
Yeah.
And
have a great day.
Yeah.
Yes. Guys, anytime.
All right.
Bye. Again, I hope everything goes well.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, bye now.
All right, bye.
Bye.
And that, sports fans, was Don Taylor, the anchor of Sportsnet at Night, talking about Canucks, talking about everything. Thank you again, Don, to Don Taylor for doing this. It was an absolute pleasure.